Hi, this is Farah Yurduz from Jerry Pippin Radio Show. We are in New York City, and my today's guest is Harold Egeln.
Hi, how are you? And I'm glad to be on the show. Thank you very much.
Thanks to you, Harold. Harold is a very special person for UFO community. He's going to tell me about his background in UFO researches, and I would like you to tell me about yourself.
Well, first, I'm a professional journalist. I work for newspapers in Brooklyn, New York. I've been doing that for 15, 16 years now. And so I'm a newspaper reporter. So that comes factor in my own investigations. I bring that objectivity, or try to bring that into my investigations.
But what about the UFO investigations?
Okay, the UFO investigations I've done on my own. And the way that all started was because of my own experiences, which I didn't realize were UFO experiences at the time, back in 1972-73. I actually thought they were ghost hauntings until I read Bud Hopkins' book Missing Times first in 1981, and there were things in there about blue lights and paralysis and barking dogs and a bunch of things that occurred to me on December 1972 when I was living in New Jersey. And I was trying, again, it also happened in 1986 in upstate New York when I was taking a vacation in a cabin. So when I read Intruders subsequently, he talked about these blue lights, things like that, barking dogs. So I wrote him back in 1987. A year later, he responded and referred me to a hypnotherapist here in New York City, Dr. Jean Monday. And I went to her, had an appointment in when was it, July of 1988. I do meditation, so the hypnosis went very well, very easily. And she took me back to this incident back in December 5th, 1972. And I recalled, or had images, I should say, of being taken from my bedroom at 3 o'clock in the morning, being taken out into the woods. We lived in a house, but a group of people and I lived in a house on 40 acres of woods in West Orange, New Jersey. And I went out there, and there were beings in front and back of me, and there was a dark object over the meadow and some sort of shaft of light coming down from the object. And I remember going up there. I felt like I was going up an elevator or an escalator and being floated into a room and being put into what I can best describe as a chair, kind of like a lounge chair, and seeing these beings walking to the room and snapping out of that situation, finding myself back into bed.
So is this your first abduction experience?
Maybe, probably not. But when I had that hypnosis, I didn't believe it.
Expect the hypnosis, did you get any other research on your physical body?
I didn't recall anything like that at all. Just a visitation. And Dr. Jean Monday, being a psychologist with 20 years experience at St. Vincent's Hospital at the time, thought that they might have come because 2 weeks before I had a very serious car accident. I wasn't injured at all, fortunately, but my Volkswagen spun out of control on the Garden State Parkway in New Jersey, turned over a few times, had my seatbelt on. I was psychologically shaken up by that experience. The car was destroyed, I was all alone, but I didn't have a scratch on me. She thought that they came because they had a concern about me for whatever reason, and that's the reason why they came at that point.
So do you believe that they protected you?
Yes and no, because I can't prove it, you know, but the timing is very intriguing.
Did you have any other abduction experiences or contact experiences after the first one?
1986, and I was working for, I was the director of a big peace group here in New York City, and I took a vacation at a place called the Grail near Newburgh, New York. The Grail is a place, a farm run by nuns who have been disenfranchised by the Catholic Church. But they had this marvelous cabin called a Hermitage, and I stayed there for a week. The very first night I was there, I thought I saw a UFO about 11 o'clock at night. I went to deep sleep. Again, 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up. There was a blue light in the room. There was a dog barking outside. And my heart started racing, and when I woke up, that subsequently that morning, I was very, very sick. I had a nausea, huge headache. I had that back in 1972, by the way. And that made me think, And about 6 months later, two books came out. It was Whitley Strieber's Communion, mm-hmm. with that face on the cover, that
yes,
intriguing face. That intrigued me. I was familiar with Whitley Strieber through two books, War Day and Nature's End, which are environmental and books about nuclear war. Mm-hmm. So I bought the book, and it all seemed very familiar. I resonated with it. It didn't scare me. I just resonated with what he had to say. 2 months later, Bud Hopkins, Intruders, The Incredible Visitation at Copley Woods came out, and that's when I decided to contact both Whitley and Bud Hopkins.
Yes.
And of course, a year later, it led me to Dr. Gene Monday, also Whitley Strieber in 1989, and a communion support network around the country of 20 groups. And I was instrumental in helping get the group a meeting place at a store in Chelsea back in May of 1989, and that's when I met a lot of people, you know, through his group. But I also met a lot of people through Dr. Gene Monday. Because through Dr. Jean Monday, she was seeing other people referred by Bud and Whitley. And so I would meet them, sit down in the coffee shop, just listen to what they had to say, because they had no one else to talk with. And that would eventually lead to a founding of the group we have today.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting that many abductees couldn't recall what happened to them, but when they saw that book cover, Communion, they suddenly started to remember what happened to them.
It was like, oh, wow, you know,
yes.
Look at that, you know. And they picked up the book. Some recoiled from it, but it set off those memories, of course. And some bought the book. They were frightened by it, and some were intrigued, like I was, about what Whitley Strieber had to say. It was a very brave move on his part. It's a very brave move for people to go in and read that book, I think, and to actually follow through and maybe investigate their own experiences.
I would like to ask you your personal opinion based on your own experiences. What is the real purpose of abductions?
Very good question, and people have been debating that ever since the Betty and Barney Hill case.
Yes.
And I don't think there's any one specific answer. I don't have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
But through our discussions within the space group, the Search Project for Aspects of Close Encounters, a support group we started back in 1992 here in New York City, there are many explanations for it. I don't think anybody has a clear picture. You know, this is it. They're experimenting on us. They want to perpetuate the race. They want to form hybrids. That's all part of it. But there are other levels to the abduction scenario which are even more intriguing, and that involves another whole scenario on how information is transmitted and interpreted, misinterpreted, and that's a big factor. The information that comes to us because of our experiences. I think the abduction experience is basically happens, but it happens as an information packet. Many people feel they've been downloaded with information. Some forget, some think they'll remember later on. Some comes in through relaxation techniques, various methods. People write books about it, they form belief systems. It's basically an information experience, a heavy duty quantum information data experience that we physically experience and mentally try to express and emotionally try to understand as well on that level as well.
But I think that abduction experience may bring some negative results or negative effects on the abductee, psychologically and sometimes physically. What is your opinion?
Well, in our support group, we've had hundreds of people come through the support group, and half of the group, I would estimate, have had bad experiences. They cried during the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
They share their stories. We give them support and everything, and they're allowed to express, you know, they don't want this. They want it to go away, and, you know, it's part of the whole scenario. So it's definitely there. People have scars in their body, mental scars as well, and so there's a very negative level to this. As a side of the positive level as well. You know, it varies, but it's all there.
Did you ever find physical scars or bruises on your physical body?
Oh, sure. In fact, right after this incident in December 5th, 1972, on my shin, some spots appeared in a triangular formation.
What color?
They were red.
Mm-hmm.
And there were three in the shape of a triangle and a double set. There's a double set of triangles, one half the size of the other plus a dot in the middle. I didn't make the connection, of course. But I went to a dermatologist and he said it's just, you know, something that will go away, dermatitis or something. And subsequently, back in 1993 or so, when I was doing an environmental column for a newspaper here in New York, I was doing a story on people who can detect diseases by looking at the bone structure of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there and had a bone scan of that area. I just mentioned, how about that area? I didn't mention anything about it. And when they scanned it, they said there's something unusual in that spot. They didn't know what it was, but they said they'd never seen it before. So that was 1993 around, and my incident happened back in 1972. So that might explain it.
So you have been extremely active in UFO community, and you are also a publisher. You are publishing your own Space Explorer magazine, or newspaper magazine.
Yeah, magazine.
Mm-hmm. And this is a complete volunteer job that you are doing. Yes.
It's for information and to help people, and that's something that I like to do. I did it when I was in the peace movement. I'm still in the peace movement. As long as you can help people along, no matter what their experience, that's the whole purpose of this, the newsletter, or the support group, and the research, and that's always there, and I'm always ready to hear people and help them whenever I can.
How much of your time is dedicated to your UFO investigations, publishing, making the websites, or talking with people?
Well, I don't use a time clock.
Let's say that.
But it could be hours per week. It was very, very heavy during the 90s when we started the group, devoting several hours a week besides from my newspaper job and things like that. So it's hours and hours every week. It varies from week to week. And sometimes it's talking to somebody over the phone, meeting them at a coffee shop, or, of course, having meetings. And so a lot of time, but hundreds, maybe thousands of hours.
So what pushes you to this activity? I guess nobody forces you.
No.
You are the only one who decides about dedicating your time to UFO alien researches. What is your expectation?
Well, first, the motivation is that it's up to all of us to explore this experience, whether you want to or not. We don't have to. You can let it go. You can explore. You can explore with the researchers. You can do it on your own. You can do it as a group. Whatever suits the person, whatever they feel comfortable with. And this is my way with others of doing this. I felt very alone for a while, you know, and so I wanted to share, have people come and just share their experiences and just the beauty of that, you know, and let that happen. It's kind of like what the Quakers do at their meetings. They sit around, they don't, if a person wants to speak, they speak. If they don't, they hold back. If they want to share, you know, it's all up to the person, and it's up to me to do how I want to do it, and this is my preference.
And I guess this makes you happy.
It does, right? There's been ups and downs with it because people, you know, interpret certain things, and that's always a part of the problem and part of the solution. And basically, I'm happy with this.
And I would like to ask you about space. What has space learned about the UFO mystery?
Okay, SPACE, the search project for aspects of close encounters, was formed March 1992. People I knew from Whitley Strieber's group, a few people from Bud Hopkins group, and people I met through Dr. Gene Munday. For many years, we had monthly support group meetings. People knew they had that meeting time. We'd meet in an apartment here in New York City or some other venue. And so that's a very important component of the SPACE group. And the way people come into the group is not, they don't have to be hypnotized or anything, but they're referred to us. I and other people usually meet with them, you know, to make an evaluation, and then they're invited to the meetings, which are private, of course. There's no recording or anything like that. Another aspect is the proactive aspect. What do you do with this experience? What can you move it along? Can you change it? Can you affect it in your lives? And that's a thing I learned during the peace movement was empowerment, the question of empowerment, personal empowerment, to not let people things happen to people without them having a role or a say in it. Of course, it's very difficult under these circumstances. So we have another component of space called the proactive part, the research, the field work. When I referred to earlier about my experience of hypnosis back in 1988, I didn't believe that that actually happened to me because I had to see and experience it in conscious time. And I knew there were a lot of UFO sightings up in the Westchester area investigated by the investigator Phil Imbrogno, who put out a book called The Hudson Valley UFO Sightings.
Yes.
And so I decided with a friend who was convinced of many years before, a psychic friend, that I had experiences to, in August 1988, to go to Westchester County, stay the weekend with a friend of hers, and we drove around Putnam County on a Friday night, and we parked near a reservoir, and we looked out. You know, I got very scared. If something does show up, I'm going to have a heart attack or faint or something. Next night, we went out to the same spot called Reservoir Road, Magnetic Mine Road in Brewster, New York. I'm not knowing the history of the area, that specific area, except that UFOs have been seen over that area. And my friend, the psychic, was going across, out trying to create an experience. I was just looking out towards the reservoir, and I saw something glowing out there. And I saw these huge heads moving through the woods with big eyes. And the eyes were glowing, and they were moving, five of them in single file, looking at me. And I knew they weren't deer or anything. Clearly, they were beings. You know, the classical one that I saw on the cover of Communion, there were five of them. And I called my friend over, she came over, and she said, oh my God. And at that point, the five figures stopped. They were about 100 feet out in the woods, approximately. And I had a big flashlight, I was gonna shine a flashlight at them, but there's a dog coming down the road, barking at us. I was very frightened about the dog, not what I saw out in the woods. And the dog let us, you know, I shined the flashlight out there, and I couldn't see anything, we couldn't see anything when that was done. And we hightailed it into the car to get away from the dog. So that was the seeing it with my own eyes, even though it might not have been the personal, they might not have been involved in my own experience, to actually see them had a great impact. And a similar thing happened in 1991, where four of us went up there, and we had a more extensive experience with beings who actually formed out of thin air, it seemed, forming conical shapes and appearing to be wearing hoods and a robe and all sorts of things and fading into the rocks and coming out. Now, the area I'm speaking about, there have been abductions in that road which I did not know about before 1988, the 1988 incident. There's an ancient stone chamber off the side of the road, apparently built hundreds, maybe thousands of years ago. I was unaware of those chambers at that spot. So it was kind of like being guided. You seek and they come to you, or at least they're aware you're seeking them out. And that was the whole idea, and that's the whole level, another level of space. And since space formed, we've had dozens of people in this area, Magnetic Mine Road, the reservoir, and we've seen lights moving in the sky. We've recorded them. We've seen them stop, flash back at us. We've had various incidences on the roads up there. And that's a whole nother component.
So can we say that there is a spiritual or psychic connection between the human beings and the extraterrestrial visitors?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, a lot of paranormal experiences that people had, including myself, were thought to be ghosts. When I had the experiences in West Orange, we tried to get two psychics from Montclair, New Jersey to investigate. I decided not to do that. Other people had heard people laughing in the woods, even though nobody was there. People woke up and there was a ghost standing, what appeared to be a ghost standing at the edge of their bed. Someone saw me one night walk in with a woman with a long white robe, long white hair, up the stairs. I don't recall that. We thought it was all ghosts. And there were feelings of being watched and things like that, and voices in the woods and all sorts of things. And that's a common occurrence with many people, what could be ghost experiences could actually be UFO experiences on another level.
So, or can we say that for a person who has paranormal talent or psychic gift or mediumic gift, is it easier for them to see the UFOs, or are they more open to extraterrestrial contact, or it doesn't matter?
It really doesn't matter. It does help to have those paranormal psychic abilities. For instance, the experience in 1988 when we went up to Magnetic Mine Road, I got an impression of a date to go there. Mm-hmm. Independently of me, the psychic got the same date and general location. So it felt like some there was a psychic element involved in that. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a part of that. So it helped us go to that area. It helped me to learn more about my own experiences because of that.
And also lately, in the recent years, many people are talking about the reptilian race. And not only the Greys, also the reptilian or Anunnaki race is very, very interested in having contacts with Earth people. What is your opinion?
Okay, within our own group, we've had all these expressions of the reptilians, the Anunnaki. We've had people report them as angels with wings and all sorts of things, and other forms that have not usually been reported, but we hear over and over again, like conical shapes and things like that. So there's a whole, or orbs, even orbs that have been seen. They seem to be some sort of communication. So it takes many forms, and the Anunnaki, we've had discussions of that. It could be a mix of this. I think it's more, it's far more subtle, far more deeper, far more on a quantum level that a lot of this happens, not all of it. But a lot of it seems to be happening on an other dimensional level, by other dimensional levels, other layers of reality that seem to support the physical reality we live in, we experience. I think that is where we think of the psychic stuff, we think of psychic, or where the UFOs might come from and how they manifest. That's all definitely all in the matrix.
So you also think that some of the orbs are not ghost manifestations, but they may be the manifestations of extraterrestrials?
Yeah, because we've taken some people have taken pictures up at the Magnetic Mine Road area in Brewster, New York, and we've seen orbs which seem to be, and we've actually seen these orbs with our own physical eyes, and they seem to be manifestations of that too.
But what about the orbs that we take pictures, when we take pictures in the rooms, in the closed areas, not outside?
They could be associated with psychic factors. I have had at a party, someone took a picture of me and a couple of other people. Their orbs were in the pictures. And I take thousands of pictures as my job as a news reporter. I never see them there. But, you know, we've seen them on these films. And I've taken the film to the person who used to do our photographs. And he said that whatever you have there is actually there. So.
And do you consider yourself as a psychic?
I never use that word. I think we all have abilities, intuitive, psychic, what are called psychic abilities. I've had feelings of telepathy since I was a little child. I knew things that other people didn't know, and of course I didn't know exactly what it was when I was 6 or 7 years old. And I always knew things were going to happen and all that, so it's always been with me all my life.
And do you think that being abducted helps to increase the psychic abilities, or having the implants, maybe the implants in the brain or on the head area, helps to increase, to develop the psychic ability?
Yes and no, because it seems that that's always an open question. It seems that people say they're more psychically attuned and all that, and that's been documented. And sometimes it might even help their abilities, or it seems to help their abilities. We've had people report implants that are not exactly physical, but within what they say is their energy field. That's not reported too often, but they feel that that's to help them communicate better on a psychic level. That's how they say it. So there are many forms of that. And I think there's also, besides, there's also a symbolic thing going on here, which is too far to go into detail right now, but there seems to be, in terms of understanding quantum physics, a way of communicating through various devices that can be physical and non-physical at the same time.
I guess you have been from a very long road, lots of experiences in your own life. And I wonder when you are going to write your book only about your own experiences.
People have asked me that many, many, many times, and I'm always reluctant to do that because there's so much information out there, and I feel that maybe I'll be repeating what other people are repeating. I don't want to do that. And I want it to be unique in everything. In fact, there is one book, not about my own experiences. Actually, I have a book of my experiences on my word processor at home. It's incomplete, but it's there. And I also have we also have another book about the other experiences that are involving synchronicities, UFO sightings, abductions, and all sorts of things, which is called Project Wonderland Chronicles. Mm-hmm. That book is actually on the web right now.
There is something that I would like to know, and you are an expert, especially you are a New York City-based UFO researcher. Why there aren't any more UFO congresses, conferences in the East Coast?
Yeah, great good question. A lot of people miss that. Back in the 90s, there were several UFO conferences. We had a whole panel discussion. I got a couple of those conferences, more than a couple. And people keep on asking me, the last really big ones we had were the Intruders conferences at the Hall of Science. In fact, there's a review in a newsletter I gave you about that last one or the one before that. And it's a shame we don't have them. Other parts of the country do. We need them. I wish we'd have them, and I wish we could all get together in New York and put one together ourselves. I think we have enough talent, energy, and imagination here to do that.
And lots of sightings, lots of experiences, lots of volunteers, lots of skeptics at the same time. So do you get any reactions from the skeptics?
Yes, of course. It doesn't bother me that much because I know where they're coming from.
Where are they coming from?
Not a very good place.
Do you think that one of the reasons of the skepticism is a fear?
Oh, yeah, I think it's a big factor, the fear that there's going to be something more to reality in this world, in this universe. And it doesn't fit into their paradigm and the way of thinking and what they know. And that's always been a challenge for humanity for thousands of years, and it's manifesting itself, you know, in this way right now.
And also, there is something else. There are people who say that, I want to believe, but I want to see. So what can we do for them?
Very good question, because I've been asked that many times, and I said it's not a bad matter of belief, of course, but it's the experience and the knowledge that this actually is existing. And we've had experiences where people have actually asked, and they've seen these things. We've done that through our fieldwork, of course. People have gone up there, have not all been experiences or abductees. There have been those who've asked that questions, and sometimes they've seen what we see, too. It could be, one night in May of 1993, we were up there and there were a lot of lights moving through the sky. So someone said, hey, how about they form a triangle for us? They did their meditation. The people did their meditation. Within minutes, out of the western sky, southern southwestern sky, came two objects followed by a third object. And as they got off in the middle of the sky, they formed a perfect triangle, stopped in the sky. And there were experiencers there and those people who wanted to believe. And when they saw this for themselves, wow, you know, so it can happen.
And also lately, especially in Mexico, there are lots of many, many mass sightings. And lots of UFOs were recorded, were videotaped, and they have been on the news, on radio, on television shows, on magazines and newspapers. I don't think that how they still try to see more than this.
In terms of?
To believe.
For belief after all this going on, right? Good question, and again, we don't get that news in the United States directly. The general public doesn't get it.
Well, but now, thanks to internet, it is very easy to see what's happening all over the world, and also it is very easy to find the DVDs or the videotapes of all those recordings.
Absolutely, of course, that's more available than ever before, especially in the last 5, 7, 8 years. So people are taking advantage of that, so they get around it. but I think for the general public, there's still a lack of knowledge, especially in terms of the media, the general mass media view of this. They've had a few things, like the Peter Jennings report, which was a mixed bag, and but they needed more. I know how the media operates. I've seen it all the time. I wrote a story on flying saucers, flying saucer meeting back in 1989 for my newspaper. My editor told me, Harold, I hope you don't believe in this. And I wrote it straight, of course, as any other story. They didn't know about my own experience, but they severely censored the article, really tore it apart and said, no more flying saucer stories, Harold. So I know that exists there, and that's a major challenge, I think. And the people who have access to the internet, which are many people now, and have access to this knowledge, should contact our newspapers, their TV stations, the general media, and see if they make a breakthrough. And there are fortunately a few reporters out there, you know, in the national media who might be open to that. We just lost one recently, Jack Anderson, a Washington, D.C. columnist who actually wrote a book about UFOs, a fictional book, but he had a lot of truth in there. So it's just a matter of finding these people and getting what we know out to the major media. I think that might be a big help.
Once they asked me if UFOs ever landed to Istanbul, my native city, and Istanbul is a very crowded city with 15 million or population, and I said that it is very difficult to find a park place for your car. How can you expect the UFOs to land?
Yeah, I know it's very crowded. One of my neighbors in my apartment building lived in Istanbul. She's from there. And so she knows it's a very crowded city, of course. And where would they find a parking space? Not there, not in New York City. But they do come up in New York City, but they don't park.
And what future projects and plans do you have related to UFO alien researches?
Well, you mentioned the books and people, of course, we have the website and a lot of the information we have is on there, but people like you have urged a book. You mentioned my personal experience that can be done easily at any time. Mm-hmm. But I think because we've had the testimony and accounts of hundreds of people that could be backed up, and we can do that. That book is yet to be written, and that's quite a project, but that's a definite project, plus the one we have on the internet right now about these other experiences that involve people in Finland and England and here. To get that published in the book form, that's quite a challenge. It's 5 volumes already, so there's plenty to do for the future.
And also, I guess, one of the things that we need to remember related to UFO phenomenon, we have to keep us very open-minded about any kinds of experiences, good or bad, because we don't know exactly what we are dealing with. Extraterrestrial effect can be positive and also can be negative on our lives. And what do you think about the channeling?
The channeling I'm very familiar with, too, because we've had people in the group who do that. In fact, one person wrote a book about her experiences and through channeling. And I've had the experience myself. I know how that works. I know the process. I know what goes on in that because I've had that. In fact, I wrote about it. I have my own little book about it, which I never published, of course. It's a factor. And I think, again, it's information, an information package, and I think interpretation has a lot to do with it. And I want to be very careful with that. And there's a positive and negative, as you mentioned, also to this. And that's always like within space. Space is like a big bench where the positives and the negatives sit together, no one mm-hmm. above the other. And that all has to be considered because we really don't know ultimately what we're dealing with, but it's very profound, it's very shocking. It's going to change the world once we get it synced in somehow globally, and that could be a very frightening process.
You know what? I know that we have to be very open-minded, but also the channeling process brings to my mind a very important question. There are thousands of people all over the world. They claim that they are in contact with extraterrestrials, and they try to see extraterrestrials as if they are angels, and they are trying to help us in every way. And if they are getting some help from them, my question is, why extraterrestrials doesn't give us the cure for cancer, any cancer, or for the AIDS?
Oh, that's a good question, and we've asked that several times. We've actually lost a few people to cancer, and they pleaded, you know, save me, you know, can you help me? Mm-hmm. And they've died. They passed on. We've lost a few people ourselves, some really good people, including a nice psychiatrist. So it's always a question, and some people seem to be saved. Some people seem to get help through, you know, pleading or just somehow getting help from whoever they are. So, and by asking them for help, they don't seem to come out and help us in general, like they're not saving the Earth. They obviously have an interest, and what their interest is, of course, is the intriguing question. So, it's a matter of degrees, I think, a degree of perception. No one knows for sure, and that's why it's important to keep an open mind and keep on asking the questions and what's really going on and being very careful with the answers we get, however they're received.
Because they have been really interested in the human race, and in one way or another, they are using the human woman and human man to create maybe a new race. But while they are trying to do this, why they don't give us a couple of secrets of the important health issues?
Yeah, obviously a manual from them would be very helpful, a health manual from ET.
Okay, thank you very much for this wonderful conversation. It is always my pleasure. Do you have anything else to add?
Well, we just keep on going on and keep on trying to find out and asking the questions, and we get more questions, of course, but that's the intriguing part of it. And we just keep on going on to find out, hopefully someday in our lifetime.
Thank you very much, Harold.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very kindly.